Fellow Insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is your host, Bruce Ash, coming to you live, along with co-host Eb Wilkinson from the mothership of the Bustos Media juggernaut in the Perfection Auto Works Studios, welcoming you to an action-packed Thanksgiving weekend edition of Inside Track. We have another great show for you today with some special guests, one of them being a secret guest. We'll do a news rundown and share Thanksgiving with you, along with Scott Powell from Discovery Institute. Eb and I want to do a quick shout-out to our great Inside Track supporters. First is to my co-host, the aforementioned Mr. Wilkinson from Wilkinson Wealth Management. Eb keeps gun owners comfortably retired. Actually, he helps gun owners comfortably retire and keep comfortably retired. Now that I've butchered that, call him Monday at 777-1911, Eb.
Thank God you didn't butcher the phone number.
Oh, I know.
Eric Rudin at Essential Pest will help keep your home or business safe from pests, vermin, termites, and weeds. Call Eric's great team at 888-3029. We're hoping to get Eric back on the show with us in December. Jamie and Craig at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, you're going to be amazed at the great steel and metal products they have to offer. Have we told you recently about all the cool stuff they have, not only for your home or office or ranch, but for artists as well? Call them Monday at 209-1576. And our newest sponsor, Mike Emery at Perfection Automotive, where he and his team make autos great again. Call Mike to make an appointment at 323-8650. Bruce and I support each one of these locally owned businesses, family-run businesses, and so should you. As always, we're thankful to have producer Tom running the board for us today. He'll be taking your relevant calls for our guests at 790-2040.
All right, so Thanksgiving. Eb Wilkinson, were you with the in-laws, the outlaws, or friends, or how'd that work out?
Friends and family.
Yeah?
It was nice.
Any fist fights break out?
No, we didn't drink that much.
you crazy people from the Midwest, you and your ways. So turkey or ham?
Turkey.
And
turkey so breast?
Homemade
gravy, homemade cranberry sauce.
Which I am just devouring the last. I'm like taking the, oops, Jesus.
I'm surprised you haven't licked it yet.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, Eb made a delicious cranberry. He serves it hot during Thanksgiving. Tell our listeners what you put into this.
So most people, I don't know how they make their cranberries, but they probably don't do it.
I get it from Trader Joe's.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so you basically open up the can.
Okay. And how do you do it?
I start with a cup of orange juice, a cup of sugar, bring it to a boil. I then add 12 ounces of fresh cranberries, a half a teaspoon of coarse kosher salt, and a couple of dashes of allspice.
That's not something coarse kosher salt is not what somebody would normally think of when it comes to cranberries, right?
No, but it really makes it taste good.
Yeah, it does.
So there's a chemical reaction that takes place when you're cooking the salt with those cranberries and the acid.
It's the chemicals and how it balances it out.
Correct. Right.
And then you have allspice that you add.
Then I add allspice in. And you could taste the allspice in that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It is fabulous. Eb heated it up for me. He kind of was, very secretive as he came in. You were kind of hiding those little things.
I absolutely hit it.
Like he was doing a bootleg or something on me.
Done that before.
Yeah. Well, it's that Kentucky, thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what was the topic of conversation at your Thanksgiving dinner? Was it politics or family?
It was pretty much sports.
Oh.
Yeah, there was, it wasn't really.
Boilermaker sports?
Well, we did a little Boilermaker talk, and, it was good. But it's comfortable because everybody is on the same page politically, so we get no disagreements there. We just, bitch about the cow, the current occupant of the White House, and all the disasters that he is creating.
Yep.
And moving forward from there, it was nice to see that Kamala Harris, for all her faults, cooks on gas.
All right. So they're going to have to take her gas.
You saw that photo,
from
right?
From her dead cold hands?
From her warm, Coal-fired hands.
Okay. Desserts.
We're not too big on desserts.
You just stock up on the turkey and the dressing.
Absolutely. How about you? How about at the Ash household?
Well, we were at the Outlaw's house. It was not at the Ash's. Since Mike got married, we're always at his in-laws. And it's, her, Annie's close family. And then there's always a neighbor, actually in this case a former neighbor, and his wife who joins them. And we were kind of focused around U of A basketball because they played at 2 o'clock. That's when the dinner started. So we kind of had that running in the background. And then after the second half started, we had finished dinner and we were, raring to go to watch the Wildcats beat their opponent.
Okay.
So it was a lot of fun. And actually, the food was great. And turkey and two different kinds of stuffing, lots of relishes and different things. And every one of the pastries was all homemade. And the crusts were amazing. I had a pumpkin pie. We took a piece of it home because I actually had two helpings of the stuffing.
Nice.
Stuff. So I wanted to kind of take it easy on the carbs. And I had that last night watching one of our shows on TV, and it was fabulous. The crust was unbelievable.
What show did you watch?
We actually started a new series. It's an AMC series, so 5 or 6 years old now, called The Sun. And predates Tombstone. It predates Yellowstone.
Okay.
Pierce Brosnan is the is the leader of the family, and it's a relationship with his son Pete, and that's the son they're talking about. And it's in South Texas, literally in the Rio Grande Valley, right on the border with Mexico, dating from the early 1850s all the way through the late 20s, and very interesting. Psychological drama. It's sort of like Yellowstone in the way is that they're the Sopranos on horseback.
Nice.
There's lots of killing that goes on in this particular show.
Did you watch the Dallas Cowboys game against the... By the way, let's talk about Washington for a minute.
They're never going to be the Commanders as far as I'm concerned.
So let me ask you this. If you call a tail a leg, how many legs does a dog have?
None.
No, the answer is 4 because it doesn't matter what you call the tail.
Okay.
A dog still has 4 legs.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you call the Washington team.
I still call the Cleveland team the Indians.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. So Washington Redskins, Dallas Cowboys. You watch the game?
I did.
Did you watch half show?
I did not.
You did not see Dolly?
I heard Dolly Parton.
Holy crap.
So she's still got quite a figure.
She has a great figure.
And she was great. Vocals.
Great singing.
Yeah.
Guess her age.
She's like almost 80 or something.
She's 77 years old.
Yeah. Almost as old as you.
She oh my God, thanks. She put half those cheerleaders to shame.
All right, well, let's go back to a little bit of Thanksgiving history. Every year for many decades, the Wall Street Journal has published a message on Thanksgiving Eve. Eb and I want to share it with you. Eb, the desolate wilderness.
It's an account of the pilgrim's journey to Plymouth in 1620, as recorded by Nathaniel Morton. Here beginneth the chronicle of those memorable circumstances of the year 1620, as recorded by Nathaniel Morton, keeper of the records of Plymouth Colony, based on the account of William Bradford, sometime governor thereof. So they left that godly and pleasant city of Leyden, which has been their resting place for above 11 years. But they knew that they were pilgrims and strangers here below, and looked not much upon these things, but lifted their eyes to the heaven, their dearest country, where God hath prepared for them a city, and therein quieted their spirits. When they came to Death's Haven, they found a ship and all things ready. And such of their friends as could not come with them followed after them, and sundry came from Amsterdam to see them shipped, and to take their leaves of them. One night was spent with little sleep, with the most, but with friendly entertainment and Christian discourse, and other real expression of true Christian love. The next day they went aboard, and their friends with them, where truly doleful was the sight of that sad and mournful parting, to hear what sighs and sobs and prayers did sound amongst them, what tears did gush from every eye, and pithy speeches pierced each other's heart. That sundry of the Dutch strangers that stood on the quay as spectators could not refrain from tears. But the tide, which stays for no man, calling them away, that were thus loath to depart, their reverend pastor falling down on his knees, and as they all with him, with watery cheeks, commended them with the most fervent prayers unto the Lord and his blessing. And then with mutual embraces and many tears, they took their leaves of one another, which proved to be the last leave to many of them.
Being now past the vast ocean and a sea of troubles before them in expectations, they now had no friends to welcome them, no inns to entertain or refresh them, no houses, or much less towns, to repair unto seek for succor. And for the season it was winter. And they that know the winters of the country know them to be sharp and violent, subject to cruel and fierce storms, dangerous to travel to known places, much more to search unknown coasts. Besides, what could they see but a hideous and desolate wilderness, full of wild beasts and wild men? And what multitudes of them there were, they then knew not. For which way soever they turned their eye, save upward to heaven, they could have but little solace or content in respect to any outward object. For summer being ended, all things stand in appearance with a weather-beaten face, and the whole country full of woods, thickets, represented a wild and savage hue. If they looked behind them, there was a mighty ocean which they had passed and was now as a main bar or gulf to separate them from all civil parts of the world. And they publish this every year at Thanksgiving time at the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, I love reading the comments, and sometimes I'll make comments as well. And there is literally, and there's hundreds of comments on this every year, literally nobody does the diatribes against this. I mean, this really is it's a great document about how difficult that life was.
We know they could, but we're glad that they don't publish any diatribes against it. And how could they, and why should they?
Well, because everything's political these days.
By the way, little known fact, I'm descended from Richard Warren, who came over on the Mayflower.
Wow. You have somebody also in your family who signed the Declaration of Independence.
And I
also
have somebody who signed the Declaration of Independence after whom I'm named, or for whom I'm named.
You're like a regular blue blood.
Well, I'm trying. Not quite as blue as you.
I'm from Ukraine. I don't know. And we came here in 1906. All right. On another topic, earlier this week, we observed the 60th anniversary of the JFK assassination in Dallas, Texas. I was an 11-year-old school kid in Mrs. Falwell's sixth grade class at Cragen Elementary School here in Tucson. It was a late Friday morning, and our classmate Jim Kraft came back from patrol duty. He told our teacher that a driver had stopped him in the street where he was posted on crosswalk duty and told him that someone had just shot President Kennedy. Our teacher immediately reacted by turning on the radio we had in the classroom to get any news. Only sparse details were available at that time. Our teacher ran down the hall to get one of the few TV sets we had at school, and we tuned in to Channel 13, where the news flashes were mixed in with the daytime soap opera As the World Turns on CBS. As time passed, our teacher told us she had grown up in Hyannis with the Kennedy family, played games with them during the summer and over holidays. She was understandably by this time sobbing when Walter Cronkite announced the president had died at about 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. Like everyone my age or older, we remember every moment practically from that time throughout the entire funeral ceremony on Monday. Early on, we learned the information on the Dallas police officer, J.D. Tippit, who had been shot in the Oak Cliff neighborhood close by the assassination site. Then, the discovery of a rifle in the Texas School Book Depository. The scuffle and arrest of Lee Harvey Oswald at the Texas Theater, which, by the way, still stands. Surreal television images of a beaten Oswald with a shiner over his left eye, actually answering questions from newsmen in the hall of the Dallas Police Department. Hours of eyewitnesses being interviewed who were at the scene in Dealey Plaza and along Elm Street where Kennedy and Connolly were shot. And later after dinner, believe me, I had no appetite that night. The dark video images from Andrews Air Force Base where Air Force One had landed, bringing the president's body back to Washington and Mrs. Kennedy being helped off the exit of the jet and into the hearse with his coffin, bloodstains on her dress. And later came President Johnson's halting words in his Texas drawl, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." I stayed up late that Friday night taking everything in. After my parents were asleep, I was soaking everything until I went to sleep in the early hours. And the next morning, I resumed my spot on the couch in front of the TV, never leaving the house that day. There was no regular programming, just everything about the assassination. Just news about the day before and the plans for the president's funeral, and much speculation by politicians and news people about Oswald, the Russians, about Castro, about Vietnam and the recent assassination of President Diem about a month earlier, Johnson, who was seen as a lesser political leader than JFK. We watched the body laying in state in the White House East Room on the same catafalque that bore Lincoln's body in 1865. Mrs. Kennedy had the presence of mind to instruct the White House usher to follow the exact protocols from 1865. Jackie, with her young children, came into the East Room, placed her hand on the flag-draped casket, and said a last goodbye to her husband. Sunday morning, my mother took my sisters and I to Hebrew school at Temple Emmanuel. Later, when she picked us up, she was listening to KTKT when we heard that Lee Oswald was shot by some guy in the basement of the Dallas Police Department. As a 12-year-old kid, I could not imagine the impact his killing was to have, except that I was glad at some level that Oswald was taken out. The president's body had been taken from the White House on Sunday to the Capitol Rotunda and was on public display. 250,000 mourners walked past, but many millions watched live on TV. Leaders from around the world were gathering in D.C. for the funeral. I think a lot of people were thinking, what was going to happen next? I know I was. The funeral the next day on Monday at St. Matthew's was a spectacle. One of the U.S. Army's old guards' horses, Blackjack, the rowdy, riderless black horse who was in the funeral procession, also for Harry Truman, LBJ, and Herbert Hoover, with boots and stirrups backwards indicating a hero's death in battle, accompanied the president's caisson bearing his body. The cadence of the drums, which I still hear in my mind, the clopping of the horses on the pavement, and the Kennedy family, including Jackie Kennedy, leading this probably never-to-be-repeated who's who of world leaders who walked to the church where the burial service was held, and onto Arlington as dusk was beginning to take effect for the burial itself, surrounded by family members and world leaders. That was it. We went back to school on Tuesday, sort of numb, and we continued to be numb for a long time. We observed Thanksgiving that same week on Thursday, and it was a much somber affair. In March, I'll turn 72, and I'm still affected by that day and the days following. I am not sure who was in on the assassination. I did think we'd know more by now, and I'm suspicious why we don't know more after all these years. I'm sure of one thing, though. That day in November changed the course of history for America and perhaps for the entire world. The country has never been the same and perhaps will never be the same country again before noon on the 22nd. Yep.
The Wall Street Journal, in their Notable and Quotable, published the following from Notable and Quotable. James Pearson from City Journal yesterday, the lasting impact on the JFK assassination. It was no wonder that many Americans decided that Oswald must not have been the assassin after all. John Kennedy's assassination was an event of the Cold War. There could be little doubt about this in view of Oswald's activities in the months leading up to it. Nevertheless, America's liberal leadership interpreted it as an event in the Civil Rights Crusade. It was no wonder that many Americans, after hearing claims about civil rights, hatred, and bigotry in connection with the assassination, decided that Oswald must not have been the assassin after all. That idea pushed the real assassin, along with his motives and far-left ideology, into the background in accounts of the event, and it came close to airbrushing his deed out of the historical record. The widespread feeling that dark elements in American culture contributed to John F. Kennedy's death, encouraged by media figures and politicians, promoted an anti-American attitude that shaped the radical and counterculture movements of the 60s and endures into our own time, extending its institutional reach. In this regard, the effects of the assassination are all around us.
Certainly are.
We're going to finish this segment of today's show with a positive message of hope, always or also from the Wall Street Journal. This piece, which has run every year at this time since 1961, titled, "And the Fair Land." For all our social discord, we yet remain the longest enduring society of free men governing ourselves without benefit of kings or dictators. Anyone whose labors take them into the far reaches of that country, as ours lately have done, is bound to mark how the years have made the land grow fruitful. This is indeed a big country, a rich country, in a way no array of figures can measure, and so, in a way, past belief of those who have not seen it. Even those who journey through its northeast complex into the southern lands, across the central plains and to its western slopes, can only glimpse a measure of the bounty of America. And a traveler cannot but be struck on his journey by the thought that this country one day can be even greater. America, though many know it not, is one of the great underdeveloped countries of the world. What it reaches for exceeds by far what it has grasped. So the visitor returns thankful for much of what he has seen, and in spite of everything, an optimist about what his country might be. Yet the visitor, if he is to make an honest report, must also note the air of unease that hangs everywhere. For the traveler, as travelers have always been, is as much questioned as questioning, and for all the abundance he sees, he finds the questions put to him ask where men may repair for succor from the troubles that beset them.
His countrymen cannot forget the savage face of war. Too often they have been asked to fight in strange and distant places for no clear purpose they could see and for no accomplishment they can measure. Their spirits are not quieted by the thought that the good and pleasant bounty that surrounds them can be destroyed in an instant by a single bomb. Yet they find no escape, for their survival and comfort now depend on unpredictable strangers in far-off corners of the globe. How can they turn from melancholy when at home they see young arrayed against old, black against white, neighbor against neighbor, so that they stand in peril of social discard? Or not despair when they see that the cities and countryside are in need of repair, yet find themselves threatened by scarcities of the resources that sustain their way of life? Or when in the face of these challenges they turn for leadership to men in high places, only to find those men as frail as any others? So sometimes the traveler is asked, whence will come their succor? What is to preserve their abundance or even their civility? How can they pass on to their children a nation as strong and free as the one they inherited from their forefathers? How is their country to endure these cruel storms that beset it from without and from within? Of course, the stranger cannot quiet their spirits, where it is true that everywhere men turn their eyes today, much of the world has truly wild and savage hue. No man, if he be truthful, can say that the specter of war is banished, nor can he say that when men or communities are put upon their own resources, they are sure of solace, nor be sure that men of diverse kinds and diverse views can peaceably together can live peaceably together in a time of troubles. But we can all remind ourselves that the richness of this country was not born in the resources of the earth, though they may be plentiful, but in the men that took its measure. For that reminder is everywhere, in the cities, towns, farms, roads, factory homes, hospitals, schools, that spread everywhere over that wilderness.
We can remind ourselves that for all our social discord, we yet remain the longest enduring society of free men governing themselves without benefit of kings or dictators. Being so, we are the marvel and the mystery of the world, for that enduring liberty is no less a blessing than the abundance of the earth. And we might remind ourselves also that if those men setting out from the Deshaven have been daunted by the troubles they saw around them, then we could not this autumn be thankful for a fair land.
Friends, it's time to take a short break. No channel flipping. We'll be right back after some brief messages from our great sponsors. Stay tuned.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
All right, get in, son. It's cold, isn't it? Boy, it really is the most wonderful time of the year. You know, son, it's going to be great getting away to the White Mountains this year for Christmas. We'll all be together.
Sounds like fun, Dad.
I can't wait.
Hey, Dad, I think that's really cool the way you got the dashboard lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, not exactly, son. You see, the red light is the battery warning light. And the yellow one is the check engine light, and the red light flashing is the engine oil warning light. There's another one. That's the brake warning light. What? And the smoke? Huh? That's the... Oh, no. Come on. Go through this thing.
You know, the bright lights of the Christmas season are wonderful, but don't let them come from your dashboard. From the headlights to the taillights, we can get you ready for that journey without all the drama. Batteries, wiring, and even that pesky check engine light. 323-8650 and... PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce and I wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving holiday weekend. If you want to share your Thanksgiving experiences or your recollections about that dark day in 1963, call us at 790-2040 and we'll get you on the air. In the meantime, we're going to cover some of the stories making the news today.
So, Eb, hostage release started yesterday in Israel. What do you make of it, and what do you make of the events today, where apparently that truce is beginning to unravel because Hamas says that Israel is not providing the aid that they had insisted on?
Well, the hostage release started a couple hours late.
Yeah,
it was delayed.
Yeah, and they're delaying now, taking the rest of the 50 that are supposed to come.
Right, and notice that none of those are Americans.
No, which, I mean, this government really should be ashamed of itself for not doing this the right way. This is the way that they've been doing everything since I showed up in Washington on January 2021.
Absolutely. And notice that, now, I don't know that there's not anything going on to secure the release using Special Forces, Navy SEALs, or anything like that. But I can't see that there is right now with everything happening, Bruce. The one thing that keeps hitting home for me, they wait until now to say, let's do a four-day ceasefire, and we'll give you 50 hostages.
Right.
If they truly wanted a ceasefire, they'd surrender all the hostages, throw down their arms, and move on. But that's not what they want. They want 4 days to restock so they can go back at it. And remember...
And this will be repeated several times before the 240-ish or so hostages are eventually repeated.
Well, you're assuming that they're going to be. You know, that's number one. Number two, even after they're all said and done, the leader of Hamas has stated that they're going to keep attacking and attacking and attacking, you know, and, you know, they're using that line from the river to the sea, which, thank God, Benjamin Netanyahu says, well, if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get.
Hamas executed 3 West Bank Palestinians for spying for Israel. So now they're turning on their own population, executing spies. Whether they are or not, who knows? But the killing is going on within Gaza as well.
Absolutely.
This is a murderous group of thugs who are running that country. I won't even call it governing that country. They're just murderers and thugs, and they ruin everything that they touch.
Absolutely. And if I were Netanyahu, I would constantly put out, and we still have spies in Hamas.
Hopefully.
No, I would put that out there so that Hamas starts killing themselves off,
okay,
whether they do or not.
Good point.
You know, it is just frustrating to see this go on, number one. And number two, seeing all the pro-Palestinian protests here in the United States, mainly at college campuses, but we saw it in D.C., I personally saw it in New York City.
Yeah, you did.
You know, and these are people that say that Israel committed these atrocious acts, and yet they deny completely, like the Holocaust, Hamas coming over and raiding that music festival and killing, you know, what was it, 1,100 people?
Over 1,200.
You know, beheading babies? Come on, seriously?
So this morning, according to the New York Times, the pro-Palestinian marches are not being run by pro-Palestinians. They're now being run, they claim, by right-wing neo-Nazis. I mean, it took them, what, 3 weeks to you know, try to legitimize dissent against the Jews that's going on in this country, saying that, oh, well, it's not the Palestinians, it's the, you know, Nazi, you know, neo-Nazi far right radicals. This is crazy stuff.
It is.
You know, the New York Times continues to lie, continues to make stuff whole cloth. This will be borne out in time as well. Getting back to the executions, the execution was later confirmed to have been committed by a firing squad, according to a document published by Hamas's military wing in the West Bank. They not only seek these out for killing, they like to publicize it to
Absolutely.
Keep everybody terrorized.
Well, once again, when you, just like in Germany during World War II, when you don't know who to talk to, for fear that they're going to turn you in, that's where they're truly getting their power.
Right.
If the Palestinians, which, by the way, aren't Palestinian, they're Jordanians that were basically, you know, kicked out.
Right.
You know, if the Palestinians truly wanted peace, they could have peace tomorrow.
So I was talking with a fellow earlier this week, a former diplomat who sometimes resides here in Tucson. And not a Netanyahu fan at all, but certainly a supporter of Israel and their sovereignty. He blames the war on Netanyahu. He claims that Netanyahu knew about the war to come several weeks ago, and that they thought this was going to be part of a major Iranian Hezbollah Hamas joint and Houthi effort against Israel. That may be correct. I mean, we don't know that if it is or isn't at this point in time. But that was his clue, and he said that Hamas took it upon themselves without advising Iran, without advising Hezbollah or anybody else, that they were going to do this. But then he says Netanyahu ignored all of the signs because he actually wanted to have war because of all the political problems that he's having in Israel. Now, I'm reporting what other people are saying.
So this is along the wag the dog type theory.
That's this former diplomat's theory. And in fact, he said that these 4-day truces, if they continue, are just another way for Netanyahu to continue delaying and keeping this war going for as long a period of time as needed to help him out of his political troubles. That's where I think his entire theory breaks down, because Netanyahu's going, whether Israel wins this battle or not, and people all across Israel are saying to themselves, we cannot change horses in the middle of a war, and we don't want to change horses, but like the English did to Churchill, actually,
right,
even before the war officially was over, we just had VE Day, not VJ Day yet, in July when he lost, when the conservatives lost their re-election in Parliament. These people in Israel, and I think this man speaks for them, okay, they want Netanyahu out now, which I think creates great peril for that country.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
And I'd be interested if any of our listeners call into 790-2040 if you have an opinion on this. I think it's a bunch of BS. But it is interesting, though, that this is out there.
Hey, talk about the delay of hostages that Hamas is saying they're claiming Israel is violating the ceasefire.
They claim that it has to do with aid that is supposed to come into, provided into Gaza, that hasn't arrived. Not that no aid has been sent, but that not enough aid has been sent so far. You know, interesting, or it's important to recognize, it's a 3-for-1 body swap.
Right.
Okay? And it's Israel who's providing all of the water, food, fuel, etc., to their enemies. Now, they say that it's going to hospitals and what have you. That's
true. But we know that that's not.
But it's still going to their enemies.
Right.
And now they're complaining, holding up hostage release for the basis of trying to prolong this a little further.
At what point does Netanyahu say, I regret to inform you that all the hostages have been killed, and so we're going to a full assault against Hamas?
It can't happen too soon, as far as I'm concerned. And some people have said, well, what's the end game here? Okay.
On whose side?
Well,
Netanyahu's side is to destroy Hamas.
The end game is to destroy the Hamas.
And Hamas's end game is to destroy Israel.
Right.
And
it's a crazy world, isn't it?
It is. And my fear, Bruce, with our open border, at what point does it come here?
It's already come here.
Well, okay. At what point does it start here?
You know, I've actually been surprised. I mean, not that anybody could have ever wanted this to happen, but I've been surprised that there hasn't been some sort of a expression through terror means here in this country. When I heard about the vehicle that crashed
in Canada?
On the Rainbow Bridge coming in through Canada, I thought to myself, oh, no, here it comes. But apparently, we don't know what the problem was there. You just know that the United States has to be on a high alert to prevent such a thing from happening.
Have you noticed yourself being more aware of what's going on?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm normally I'm normally not one who carries my weapon with me, but I've started to do that now going to the office. And my son does that as well.
And how about just out and about?
Not yet. I for me personally, it's not to that extent. Yeah, so we have Charles Heller on the line. Charles, you have a question for us?
I want to push back on what I've said about the mission of Hamas is to destroy Israel. I lovingly disagree. I believe the mission of Hamas is to destroy the Jews.
Well, you destroy the Jews, you destroy Israel. You destroy Israel,
agree,
you destroy the Jews.
I don't think their mission is limited to the destruction of Israel. I believe that along with certain other organizations, Marxist inspired organizations, that they would be perfectly happy to finish off Hitler's work.
He's talking about the squad.
Maybe so.
Ilhan Omar, Ocasio-Cortez.
I'm talking more generally in terms of other Marxist-influenced organizations as well as the squad, but of which the squad may or may not be part, mm-hmm. but they're in spiritual alignment. It's not a conspiracy. The conspiracy is people getting together and planning to do something. It's worse. It's a consensus of opinion of people who hate what the Jews represent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the mission of Hamas, even though they may be limited to only trying to eliminate what they refer to as the small Satan, but they want to eliminate all Jews.
Okay, Charles, what do you say the Jews represent?
Freedom, prosperity, prosperity, success, and success of something other than the worship of Allah. So, success, and you know, the Jews were. Have been successful, you know, it's like Rabbi Kohan says, you know, that every song is they tried to kill us, we won, let's eat.
Right.
That's basically been the history. I mean, that's facetious, but it's basically been the history of the Jews. What they want to do is, you know, interrupt the cycle.
The Jerusalem Post puts out a headline this morning online, Israel investigates an elusive, horrific enemy using rape as a weapon of war. Your thoughts?
Again, not new, but in a modern application of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. You know. Look, I think whatever my disagreement with you on their end goal, whether it's Jews or Israel, it's semantics. But I think ultimately you're right. And it actually extends even to Islam, because these guys don't get along with a bunch of other Muslims as well, and they would just as soon the other sects within Islam are wiped out as well.
And then the West. They'd be perfectly content with getting over to the United States.
Oh, good luck with that.
Oh, yeah. And Bruce, get a smaller gun. Then you'll carry it always.
Actually, I have a 1903 that fits perfectly in my pocket.
Get a bigger holster and a bigger gun.
It's a 32.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks
well,
Charles.
Bye.
Yep, bye.
Hey. Talk about the Israeli-owned cargo ship that got attacked by an Iranian drone.
Launched by Houthis as well. And there wasn't any extensive damage. But it is Israeli-owned. There wasn't any injury to crew members as well. But this is something that's going on in addition to the airstrikes, to the artillery and the rocket strikes on U.S. troops, both in Syria and in Afghanistan and Iraq. This is ongoing, and our government does absolutely nothing in response.
And it pisses me off that they don't. Remember when there was the bombing of the nightclub and Reagan sent
in Berlin.
And Reagan sent the F-111s to take out Libya and Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah,
they almost got him. They killed his son, I believe, or was it his daughter?
I don't remember. Another family member.
But that stopped rather quickly.
Right. We have Mark on the line. Mark, real quick, got just a minute or so. Go ahead.
Okay, so I think there's going to be an issue with the number of surviving captives, Israeli captives, and they're just going to play games with the Israelis on who's and how many are being released. And they're releasing people who are not have been part of that whole release compact. And so I heard stories about the Israeli defense finding at least 50 bodies of the captive, stolen Israelis, kidnapped Israelis. And I think also that Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia would not mind at all if Israel destroyed and wiped out the Gaza Palestinian.
Oh, there's no power. Mark, there's no question about that. And the same diplomat I mentioned a while ago, he kind of has a very suspect sort of a view of the world. He claims that the Abraham Accords were really no big deal, that these were things that were already going on, he claims that the success of the Trump administration to change the embassy from Tel Aviv to Israel was a name only. That whole region stinks, from the head down with Hamas. We have we got to go to a break now. Before we go, though, I am going to play a thing that I think everybody here ought to hear. It's going to run 2 minutes. Oh, okay. Then let's take Renee, who has a real quick question.
Renee, you've got 1 minute and 45 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I think that Hamas and Iran want to kill every Jew on the planet. I think they also would like to take America out because of what we represent, the great Satan. And I think that it goes back to Ishmael and Isaac. It started out to be a sibling rivalry.
Sadly, you're right.
I think it's totally a spiritual thing.
You know, you have to understand your history to understand the present and to avoid history from repeating itself. And Renee, I think you've hit on the crux of this. This is a millennia age problem.
This just didn't start yesterday.
Yeah, what a great observation.
Thank you.
And Renee, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I love your show. Thank you.
Yeah, Renee makes a great point.
She does.
And we were thinking in terms of current, sort of post-1948 politics, but really this is an age-old problem.
It's always been. It has always been, and sadly, it will always be.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting phone call from Renee and from Mark. And,
thank you both for calling in. That was great.
We're going to queue up this piece in just a second. This came from one of our friends at Magan David Adam, and Elena Michael sent it to me. And it really is something that I think is a great message for us to understand. This is sort of from the 20th century forward. Renee talked about, from biblical times forward. This is from current day.
You didn't leave us any other choice. For 2,000 years, we endured pogroms, terrible suffering, attempts at ethnic cleansing, and terrible oppression just because we're Jewish. Time and again, we settled in our ancestral homeland only to be expelled. After World War II, you left us with no choice but to fight for the establishment for the State of Israel. In the wars of survival and independence, when every Arab army attacked us, you left us with no choice but to build a strong and victorious army, a stable and values-based society, and a democratic country we built with pride. In 1967, once again, when the Arab states around us attacked us, you left us with no alternative, no choice but to develop our technology, to turn it into our relative advantage, propelling us forward. From 1973 until today, you didn't leave us with any choice, and we were glad to sign peace agreements with rational countries, one after another, understanding it's the only solution for the entire region to prosper, and we want to lead that way. Since then, until October 7th, we made every effort to extend an open hand, to try all the peace options together with the democratic and rational countries that believed it was the only solution. We built a country to be proud of, and we won't give it up, because you left us with no other place to go. On October 7th, destiny called, and you didn't leave us with any other choice. It was the time for the lion to roar and all the jungle to hear.
We'll be right back. Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
Well, tonight's the night. What say we take this thing for a joyride? Santa said stay away from his souped-up sleigh. Come on, just once around the Milky Way. Get in. Oh, no. Now you've done it. You blew a head gasket. And 6 hours to take off. You better do something fast. Perfection Auto Works. Well, call him, you dumbbell.
Hello? What? Again?
Stand clear.
Whoa, dude. Here comes Santa.
Let's go. Ho, 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 ho. Wow. The sleigh never sounded better. Here we go. Let's make Christmas great again. Ho, 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 ho.
Merry Christmas from Perfection Auto Works. Bring in your sleigh, and we'll have it running just like Santa's. Brakes, belts, tires, complete auto repair. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.